Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Crime with Holly. I'm your host, Crimeaholly. In a world where our lives are so busy, it can be hard to get out there and date. It can be hard to find time to socialize outside of our day-to-day jobs and friend groups, making it even harder to find potential candidates to date. In 1995, Match.com launched, making it the first ever dating website to help singles find other singles to connect with romantically. The company Match Group Inc. that owns Match.com are now a powerhouse in the world of online dating, owning dating apps like Tinder, OkCupid, Hinge, Plenty of Fish, and several more. According to Statista.com, in 2023, online dating service users worldwide surpassed 381 million. In the United States alone, over 17% of the population, or nearly 60 million people, used online dating services. But in a world where there are monsters living among us, how do you truly know who you're swiping right and matching with? We are seeing it repeatedly in the media that women and even men have fallen victim to people who are using these online dating services for sinister reasons. When you do a quick Google search of killers who used dating apps, you will be surprised to find case after case of victims who were either attacked or murdered by a charming person they met on a dating app. You truly never know who you're agreeing to meet with or what their true motives are, and that is absolutely terrifying. Today's case is about a young woman who was just starting her life. She was on an adventure of a lifetime and decided to hop on Tinder to see if she could potentially meet the love of her life. A beautiful and trusting woman who matched with a monster looking to kill. Today's episode is on the murder of Grace Mullane. Grace Emmy Rose Mullane was born on December 2, 1996, in Essex, which is a county in southeast England that is located between London and the North Sea. Grace was the youngest of three children that her parents David and Jillian would have. Growing up, Grace had a typical childhood and had a close relationship with her parents. Being the youngest of three with two older brothers, she was well protected and always taken care of. All around, Grace was described to be just an extremely loving person. She had a huge heart, loved deeply, and was the nicest person to anyone that she met. She was described by a longtime friend as being generous, ambitious, stubborn, and a quirky friend who would forever make people laugh. When you guys see a picture of Grace, you will instantly notice her big, beautiful smile. She just had one of those smiles that made you feel welcomed and safe. Like I said, her childhood was pretty normal. The family also had a large extended family, so there was lots of cousins and aunts and uncles around at all times. They hosted family summer parties in the backyard and did huge family events for Christmas. She attended the St. Joseph's Catholic Primary School in nearby Stanford La Hope, then would eventually go on to attend the all-girls Brentwood Ursuline Convent High School, and then for her final 2 years, she attended St. Thomas More High School. Grace was a lover of music and enjoyed attending indie rock festivals that were held in Essex. She also enjoyed playing field hockey and was a member of a hockey club starting from a very young age. And she was a very talented artist and loved to sketch and paint. I will make sure to include some pictures of her art when I make my posts on social media for this case, because you guys are going to be blown away by it. Her art was so good that she had one of her pieces showcased at London's Mall Galleries. Grace also enjoyed traveling, and like most young people, she wanted to see the world. In 2013, she traveled to Iceland, and in 2015, she traveled to the United States, where she got to experience life in Los Angeles. Now, in high school, she did have a serious boyfriend that she dated for several years, from my understanding, and his name was Matt. The two tried to make their relationship work after Grace went off to college at the University of Lincoln. However, after a year at college, they decided to go their separate ways and end their relationship. Though I'm sure Grace was sad about the relationship being over, she was a confident and independent woman and continued about her life with the same love and energy she always had. She documented her good times on social media, posting pictures of her with her girlfriends, nights out at the club, pictures of her with her field hockey team, and many other adventures that she went on. Now, Grace was always willing to try something new, and it was through this willingness that she found that she enjoyed things like BDSM and rough sex. The New Zealand Herald reported that a former sexual partner of Grace's would say in court that Grace enjoyed choking during sex. He also said that the two had practiced BDSM, but they made sure to have a safe word and always discussed not only the physical, but psychological effects of BDSM. And some friends of Grace's would also talk about how they would have girl talk, and Grace also mentioned to them her sexual preferences, which included her partner putting their hands around her neck. It was also reported that Grace had accounts for online BDSM and sexual fetish communities. Now, let me just state this so it's clear. I am 100% not trying to shame Grace or give facts that aren't relevant to the case. This will eventually make sense why I am including this in here when we get further into the details. But I just want to make sure that it is absolutely clear that I am not shaming Grace or what she liked or the communities that she was a part of, but just restating the facts of this case. 100% to each their own. It makes no difference to me, nor should it make any difference to anyone else what someone's preferences are in the bedroom. So with that said, I'm going to continue on. So in September 2018, Grace officially graduated from the University of Lincoln with her degree in marketing and advertising. But she was not ready to dive headfirst into the work world, and she really wanted to take a year off where she could explore completely on her own. Grace had been saving up for quite some time for a year-long backpacking trip that would take her around the world. Leading up to her leaving, she was very active on Twitter, making tweets asking about what she should pack, talking about how excited she was, and counting down the days. On October 26, 2018, Grace left England and began the first leg of her trip in Peru. She documented her travels on social media and also made sure to keep in contact with her family back home. She never wanted them to worry about her while she traveled alone, so she always made sure to make it a priority to fill them in with pictures, text messages, and phone calls when she could. After her stop in Peru, she traveled to South America, where she spent 6 weeks before embarking on the next leg of her journey in New Zealand. She arrived in New Zealand on November 19th and made a tweet saying, of course it would be raining when she arrived there. Auckland, New Zealand was the place that Grace had been looking forward to visiting the most. She did a few touristy things within the first couple of days of arriving and even purchased her niece Harper a few toys and clothes that she mailed back home. Grace checked into the Base Backpackers Hostel in Auckland on November 29th and paid for her stay until December 8th, when she was going to be checking out and headed to Fiji, then Australia, before returning home in June. On December 1st, Grace logged into Tinder to see if she could match with anyone in the Auckland area, which she quickly matched with a cute guy named Jesse. Immediately, he messaged her asking her if she had plans for the weekend. She replied that her birthday was the following day, but said that she didn't have anything planned. He told her happy birthday and then asked if she had plans for that night. She told him no, and he asked her out for drinks. Her reply back to him was a little flirty, telling him to convince her to go with him. Jesse tells her that he knows of a pretty good Mexican place that is near Sky City that has great cocktails. Grace replies no to the Mexican, but maybe to the cocktails. They exchange a few more flirty text messages and then agree to meet at Sky City. And just to fill you guys in, because I had no idea, I've never been to Auckland, New Zealand, but Sky City is an entertainment destination that is located in the heart of Auckland City, according to their website. There, they have a casino, restaurants, and a range of attractions that both locals and tourists love to visit. They also have a very iconic sky tower that is essentially just a really big needle that stands at 328 meters high with amazing views of the city. Before meeting up with Jesse, Grace visited the sky tower and posted a picture to her social media accounts. At 6:35 p.m., Grace sent a picture of a Christmas tree at Sky City to her parents. The next morning, her family and friends kicked off the day by trying to call and text Grace to wish her a happy birthday, but their calls and text messages went unanswered. At first, everyone assumed that maybe Grace was busy, maybe she was sleeping in, but the more they tried to call, the more panicked they became. Throughout her entire travels thus far, Grace had been bombarding her family with texts, photos, and updates about her day-to-day adventures. So for her to go silent for so long, especially on her 22nd birthday, that was worrisome. Being so far away, there wasn't much that her family really could do, and they didn't want to overreact, thinking that maybe something had just happened to Grace's phone. But after 3 days and no word from Grace, they ended up calling the Auckland police and reported Grace as missing. The police issued a missing persons report and kicked off their investigation. They called the hostel that Grace was staying at and learned that she never returned after leaving the hostel around 5:40 p.m. on the night of December 1st, and all of her belongings had been left behind. Police went to the hostel and were able to access their CCTV footage and quickly spotted Grace leaving, wearing a black t-shirt style dress and white shoes. And knowing that she had been at Sky City because of the picture she had sent, it was fairly easy for them to track her movements with surveillance cameras throughout Auckland. Grace can be seen waiting for her date near that Christmas tree that she snapped a picture of. Grace is looking down at her phone, and then she looks up and sees a man approaching her. The two give each other a brief, awkward hug before turning to walk off together. Now, New Zealand is considered one of the safest places to visit, and they literally have CCTV cameras everywhere. They were able to track nearly every step that Grace took with this mystery man, and they found that the couple's first stop was a place called Andy's Burger Bar. From there, the couple stopped off at a few different bars, and sometime around 9:40 p.m., CCTV footage shows Grace walking into the City Life Hotel and full-service apartments where her date had been staying. In all the footage of Grace and her date that they recovered, the two seemed very affectionate towards each other. As the night progressed, the closer they got. Cameras at one of the bars caught them kissing, and even when they walked into the hotel, the man had his arm around her shoulders and she was holding his hand. Oddly, though, back at the bar, cameras caught something that really stuck out to authorities. When Grace got up to go to the bathroom, leaving her purse behind, Grace's date grabbed her purse and started digging through her things inside of it. It didn't appear that he took anything, but what he was looking for is still unknown to this day. As investigators watched that footage from the hotel over and over again, they found that Grace was never seen leaving the hotel after entering it. They knew that they had to figure out who this man was, and thankfully it was pretty easy to track him down. When the investigators looked at Grace's Facebook, they noticed that a man named Jesse Shane had commented on her most recent post, telling her that she was beautiful and vibrant. This piqued their interest, and after looking closer at his profile, they quickly put the pieces together that this Jesse Shane is actually 26-year-old Jesse Shane Kempson and was Grace's date on December 1st, the eve of Grace's 22nd birthday.
Years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
We're here at Menards Bank Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste. Cereal. Coffee. Dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
So let's take a second to talk about what we know about Jesse Kempson. According to the New Zealand Herald, Jesse Kempson was born in 1992 in the Wellington region. His parents had a rocky relationship, and when he was 9 years old, they finally called it quits. By all accounts, it seems like his mother abandoned him. And after the split with his father, his mom relocated overseas, and Jesse had minimal to no contact with her. Often to explain her absence to people, Jesse would just simply tell them that she was dead. He was raised mainly by his father and grandfather until his dad met another woman. This woman also had children of her own, and when things got serious between the two, they all moved in together as one big happy family. But from the sounds of it, Jesse was a pretty troubled child and teen, and the living situation did not go well. In 2013, Jesse moved out of the house when he was around 20 years old after a heated argument with his family. He had been accused of lying and stealing, and his dad had had enough, and he told him that he needed to either get help and be a part of the family, or he needs to get out of his house altogether. Jesse made the decision to walk away. It's also reported that Jesse's troubles really started at a young age, and the family had been concerned about his mental health, his constant lies he told, as well as his thieving ways. Many people who knew him well described him as a pathological liar. And even people he barely knew, including the managers of the place that he had been staying at, thought that Jesse was some big wig in a company called Woolworths, making over $150,000 a year. But as time passed, they started to get suspicious of his story because Jesse would be seen walking around the building at odd times of the day, when most executives, like Jesse claimed that he was, would be at work. Not only that, but Jesse had also missed rent payments as well. The stories that Jesse told were just endless, and each profession he claimed to have to different people were all high-paying, sophisticated jobs. But this should come as no surprise. Jesse did none of these things, and he was working in sales instead. It would later come out that Jesse had been fired on December 1st from that sales position that he was holding at that time, which that happened to be the same day that Grace went on a date with him. So once police identified the man as Jesse Kempson in the CCTV footage, they knew that they needed to bring him in for questioning. On December 6th, 5 days after Grace went missing, police arrived at City Life Hotel and Apartments, but Jesse wasn't there. While police were talking to employees at City Life, Jesse actually walks up to the building. He can be seen on surveillance outside of the building about to head inside when he spots police through a window and casually turns around and walks off. Thankfully, an employee at City Life saw Jesse and pointed him out. By the time police got outside, Jesse had taken off down the road, so police chased him, and when they caught up with him, he cooperated and willingly went in for an interview. He told them that he had met Grace at Sky City, and then the pair went to Andy's Burger Bar. Jesse also told investigators that they purposely met at a public place because he was worried he was going to be catfished. He said that he wanted to meet in public because there are people around and security so that he would feel safe about meeting a stranger. Jesse claimed that after they left the burger bar, the two walked down the road, hugged, and made promises to keep in touch, and then they went their separate ways. He said that he assumed that Grace was heading back to the hostel where she had been staying, and he then went to a sports bar. Jesse claimed the following morning when he woke up sometime between 9 and 10 a.m., he went to message Grace, but found that he had been unmatched on Tinder, and he just assumed that maybe he had done something wrong during their date. The police did not believe a word this guy was saying, and they knew that he was full of crap because the amazing coverage that New Zealand has with these CCTV cameras on every corner. So they leave him in the interrogation room for a bit, and when they come back in, they question Jesse about whether he has a tattoo or not, which he rolls up his sleeve and shows them a large tattoo that covers his lower arm. They then busted out a surveillance picture of him wheeling a large suitcase into the elevator at 8:15 a.m. where his tattoo could visibly be seen in the picture. This is when they call him out on lying about what time he had woken up on December 2nd. he plays dumb, telling them that he was certain that it was between 9 and 10, and then tells police that he still has that suitcase in his room and they can have it if they'd like. They continue to call him out on his story and caught him in several lies. And while they were pressing him for the truth, they requested a search warrant for his room at the City Life. But because the police at this point did not have any hard physical evidence, they weren't able to arrest him. The more they looked into Jesse, the more it came to light how he treated women. Many women reported that Jesse was extremely controlling and overbearing. When they would be in the early phases of getting to know each other, Jesse would ask extremely personal questions and would demand to know when they last had sex. And he also wanted to know if they were still actively having sex with people while they were getting to know each other. Talk about extremely rude and personal questions to be asking someone when you're just starting to get to know them. One of the women ended up blocking Jesse on Facebook, and that's when he started harassing her over text messages and calling her, demanding that she pick up the phone. Shifting gears a bit, let's get into more details about the CCTV footage that police were using to piece together what Jesse had been doing in the hours and days after Grace had gone missing. On December 2nd at 8 a.m., while Grace's friends and family started sending her birthday wishes, Jesse can be seen entering the elevator dressed and ready for the day and heads off to a store not far from his apartment. The store's surveillance cameras caught Jesse purchasing a large suitcase as well as cleaning supplies. From the store, he took a taxi to a car rental place where he rented a small compact car. Several hours later, Jesse went on a date with another woman that he had matched with on Tinder. Police were able to track this woman down, and boy, did she have some interesting tales to tell about their date. This woman told police that Jesse told her that earlier that day he had gone shopping for a large sports bag to carry softball equipment in, because apparently he played softball and he also taught young children to play as well. She said they started to talk about his friends, and he mentioned that all of his friends were police officers and how they had been having some serious troubles recently. He said they were having so much trouble because a lot of bodies had gone missing in the Waitakere ranges. But he tells her that police dogs can smell bodies that have been buried. But if they're deeper than 5 feet, then the bodies will go undetected. Somehow, this conversation then transitioned to the woman telling him that she had sat in on a murder trial before and how she watched a guy be put away for life. This is when Jesse said, quote, "Yeah, it's just crazy how a guy can make one wrong move and be put away for life," end quote. Talk about creepy with what we know. And his date had some serious warning bells going off in her mind too. After a little while longer, she finally told him, like, "Hey, I gotta get going." And when she left, she said that she made sure to walk the opposite direction from where Jesse headed because she was so uncomfortable by him that she wanted to get as far away as possible. After his Tinder date, Jesse continued his endeavors, and he stopped off to rent a rug doctor carpet cleaner before heading back to his apartment at 9 p.m. Just 30 minutes later, Jesse can be seen pushing a luggage cart with two large suitcases on it into the elevator, and then he took these bags out to his rental car. The following morning, December 3rd, Jesse was up bright and early and off on another adventure at 7 a.m. This time, going to a hardware store where he purchased a shovel as well as some bolts. He made a show of asking the cashier about different bolts he was looking for, and then he chatted the man up further as he checked out. Now, to me, and the investigators commented about this as well in an Amazon documentary on this case, but this seems like Jesse was trying to create a diversion. He wasn't just a random guy buying a shovel. He was buying bolts and a shovel, which apparently, maybe in his mind, he thought would be less suspicious. I don't know what his thought process was there, but whatever. At 9:30 a.m., Jesse is seen on surveillance walking into the apartment building completely barefoot. Makes you wonder why. Did he have something on his shoes that he didn't want people to see? But at 9:51 a.m., he is then seen leaving the building again in a new set of clothes, carrying a small bag that he then took to a dry cleaner to have his clothes cleaned. After that, he takes the rental car to a self-service car wash where he does a thorough job of hosing off the entire thing, which is all caught on camera. I'm talking top to bottom, front to back, and again. He also leaves behind his brand new shovel in the car wash bay before returning the car back to the rental company, and then the car was then rented to someone else. Jesse then went back to the same store that he bought that luggage bag from, and he bought another bag identical to the first. Talk about really thinking about what he's doing and preparing for the worst. He bought an identical bag just in case police came knocking and mentioned the bag that he had taken out before. The following afternoon, on December 5th, Jesse enters the elevator again. This time, he's carrying a small duffel bag. He can be seen walking through the city, throwing things away in various different trash cans, likely disposing of evidence and possibly Grace's belongings. Later that evening, Grace's dad flew to Auckland to help search for his daughter, and he made a public plea for her safe return. Early in the morning on December 6th, before police had tracked Jesse down to question him that first time, Jesse was up and out of the City Life Hotel and apartments before 5:30 a.m. He traveled to Mission Bay once more carrying a small duffel bag. This is when police believe that Jesse disposed of Grace's cell phone because it has never been recovered. Finally, on December 8th, the police brought Jesse in once again for questioning. This time, he was ready to talk. But his story on this day was far different than what he had told just days before. Jesse said that after a night of drinking and bar hopping, they went back to his apartment where they started to kiss and things started to get hot and heavy. He said that Grace asked him to turn the TV off and she started to talk to him about 50 Shades of Grey and things she liked to do in the bedroom that she had done with previous partners. According to Jesse, he and Grace started to have sex, and at first it was normal sex. But as things went on, Grace wanted it rougher. Eventually, they made their way down to the floor where Grace told Jesse to hold her arms tighter, and then eventually told him to choke her. He said it wasn't much longer, and the two had then finished. He said he got up, he went to shower to clean off since things got sweaty, and that is when he allegedly fell asleep in the shower. He woke up sometime later when it was still dark outside, and he got out of the shower and crawled in bed. Jesse said that since it was still dark in the room, he couldn't see anything, and he had assumed that Grace had left, so he went to sleep until morning. The following morning, Jesse said he woke up to find Grace still on the floor and realized that she had blood coming from her nose. According to Jesse, he said he tried to wake her by yelling at her and shaking her, but he realized that she was dead. Jesse was adamant that it was consensual rough sex that went wrong. He claims he never meant to hurt her, and when he realized that she was dead, he panicked. Jesse was arrested right then and there and charged with the murder of Grace. When police finally were able to get the search warrant I mentioned earlier and do a thorough forensic sweep of the apartment, they found Grace's blood everywhere. Though Jesse had tried to clean it up, he missed several small spots on the walls. And then when luminol was brought in, they found huge spots on the carpet that was obviously not consistent with just a nosebleed like Jesse claimed. Jesse told police that he would fully cooperate and take them to where Grace's body was. On December 9th, Jesse led police directly to Grace's lifeless body that had still been stuffed inside that suitcase, buried in the Waitakere Range. And remember that Waitakere Range is exactly where Jesse told his tender date bodies had been going missing. And he had talked about all of this while he knew that Grace was lying dead on the floor of his small apartment. That is absolutely sickening. The Auckland community were shocked to hear that Grace had been murdered. This was something that didn't happen in their area, and many people had helped search for Grace when she was first reported missing. In New Zealand, though, when something like this happens, they use name suppression and do not release names or other details in an attempt to allow the person to have a fair trial. But as the details emerged about Grace's sexual preferences and that the man responsible for killing her claimed it was consensual rough sex, people started to almost drag Grace's name and character through the mud and almost started blaming Grace for what had happened to her, which is disgusting. Grace was allowed, and everybody in that matter is allowed to experiment and try new things with partners. People are practicing this style of sex all the time, worldwide, and these people should feel safe to do so without the worry that they will be harmed. To drag a victim for their sexual preference and to shift blame to them for what had happened is just horrendous, and for her family then to be exposed to what people were saying must have been unbearable. And while there were some bad apples in the community spreading this information, there were a lot of people who mourned this British backpacker that they didn't even know, including the lead detective on this case, as well as the Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, who made a public apology to Grace's family.
Today, I would like to start with a comment on the murder of Grace Milan, having received a number of media queries about this tragedy. Firstly, I cannot imagine the grief of her family and what they will be experiencing and feeling right now. And my thoughts and prayers are with her father, David, who is in the country, her mother, Gillian, who cannot be here, and her wider family, friends, and loved ones. You know, from the Kiwis I have spoken to, there is this overwhelming sense of hurt and shame that this has happened in our country, a place that prides itself on our hospitality, on our manaakitanga, especially to those who are visiting our shores. And so, on behalf of New Zealand, I want to apologise to Grace's family. Your daughter should have been safe here, and she wasn't, and I'm sorry for that. I've advised the family through the police that if there is anything we can do to assist, we are here to help with that.
Grace's autopsy came back confirming that Grace had been strangled. She also had bruising on her arms and chest that were consistent with someone being forcefully held down. The pathologist said that pressure to Grace's neck had to have been applied for anywhere between 5 and 10 minutes before she finally passed away. For Jesse to claim that he had choked her during sex, not realizing that she was no longer alive, is complete bullcrap. 5 to 10 minutes of constant and forceful pressure takes a considerable amount of energy from someone who is applying that pressure. His story just isn't believable. And it was further confirmed that he lied about the events that happened after they quote-unquote finished having sex. Jesse claimed that he went to shower and accidentally fell asleep, But after obtaining his cell phone, police found that that was not the case at all. Jesse had been making some pretty disturbing searches on his cell phone beginning at 1:29 a.m. when he searched the Waitakere Ranges. At 1:35 a.m., he searched Hottest Fire. At 1:41, he made a search for Pornhub and proceeded to watch degrading and demeaning pornography, according to stuff.co.nz. Between 1:46 and 1:49 a.m., Jesse took 7 intimate photos of Grace's dead body, which prosecutors said he did to memorialize what he did and to keep these photos as trophies. In early November 2019, Jesse's trial began, and the defense came in prepared with their rough sex gone wrong story. They even had previous victims of Jesse's on stand, and the defense tried to shift blame to them as well for what had happened to them, which once more is absolutely disgusting. This tactic for the defense only re-victimizes the victim, and I really hate that they even try to go there. There was zero evidence that Grace had even wanted to have sex with Jesse, let alone this rough sex gone wrong theory. The trial wrapped up on November 22, 2019, and the jury deliberated for less than 6 hours before coming back with a guilty verdict. Jesse was sentenced to life in prison with a minimum of 17 years. But the story doesn't end there for him. After the trial and the name suppression had been lifted, women who saw the story about Grace recognized Jesse and came forward with their own allegations of sexual violence. According to BBC.com, in October 2020, Jesse was convicted of 8 charges relating to various attacks, including using a knife against a woman between November 2016 and April 2017. Then in November 2020, Jesse was convicted in a separate case for raping a different woman on their first and only date in April 2018. He was sentenced to an additional 11 years for those charges. Since then, Jesse has tried to appeal his murder charge, but ultimately he was denied. Sadly, after the trial concluded, Grace's father was diagnosed with terminal cancer and had a short battle before it took his life. Those closest to the case believe that it was truly Grace's death that took her father's life after he was so run down and heartbroken over the tragic loss of his only daughter. One thing that I always say that I love is when a family turns their tragedy into something that can go on and make a difference. And that is exactly what Grace's mom, Jillian, did with the help of Grace's cousin, Hannah. They founded the Love Grace Initiative, where they collect donated handbags and then fill them with toiletries for domestic abuse victims. According to a BBC article that was published in December 2023, they had filled nearly 16,000 bags for women in the UK and across the world. Jillian also raised £33,000 for the White Ribbon Charity, which aims to end male violence against women. The money that she raised helped fund education programs in 65 different schools. Jesse has never once shown any kind of remorse for what he did. He has never apologized or really taken accountability for his actions. He claims it was an accident, but any decent person would have immediately called the police as soon as they realized that a person they had just been intimate with wasn't breathing. He claims that he panicked, but in all of the surveillance videos of him after she was already dead, he was calm in his demeanor. He didn't appear panicked when he bought that large suitcase that he would eventually stuff Grace's body into. He didn't appear panicked when he rented the car, when he went on a date with this other woman, nor did he appear panicked when he purposely bought the shovel that he would use to bury Grace with. He was cold and calculating. And in court, after his additional sentencing for those other women, he was angry and had a massive outburst. Once more, never showing an ounce of remorse for the way that he treated all of these women. My heart goes out to Grace's family, and my heart also goes out to his other victims. I just can't imagine all of the pain that they must feel. And for her family to know what is being said about their beloved Grace still to this day. I will say that a lot of people are torn on this case. Some do believe that it is a possibility that it was accidental since Grace was open about her sexual preferences. Personally, I don't think that's the case, but apparently there are people who do. I'm curious to know what you guys think, so make sure that you are a part of my private Facebook group. When I post about this case, hop in and leave a comment on your thoughts. You can find the group by searching Crime with Holly Podcast Discussion Group. You can also follow me over on Instagram at CrimeaHolly. I actually posted a reel about a week or two ago about this case on Instagram. It's part of my final moments segments that I do where I showcase different cases where surveillance cameras caught people's final moments. In the video for Grace, you can actually see the footage I talk about in this episode of Jesse wheeling Grace out of the hotel in the suitcase. You can see how completely calm he was. Lastly, if you guys want more true crime content, I do plan to get my butt back in gear and start making more videos again on TikTok. So follow me over there at crimewithholly.podcast. That is all for this week's episode. Until next time, be aware and take care. Bye-bye.
We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies. Toothpaste. Cereal. Coffee. Dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big.